an increasing prevalence of night spraying. And Cotton Australia think in part that's to get the job done more quickly, but they also think that some farmers believe that there's a smaller risk of spray drift at night under still conditions.
While crops are thriving on it, recent handy rain in many cotton and cereal growing regions has a downside: weeds. And to get rid of these weeds, growers and contractors enlist the use of herbicides, often phenoxy herbicides such as 2,4-D. Gary Davey is with the New South Wales Environment Protection Authority.
The reality is with these phenoxies, because they form these fumes rather than sort of small droplets, even under still conditions, the fume can just hang in the air, and sometimes that's actually increased at night, and then when the wind picks up in the morning, the fume moves off the property. So I think there's some more education and some more work we can do with Cotton Australia and then with the farming community around those sorts of misconceptions.
The problem with night spraying is what's known as temperature inversions, and there's something that are very common, according to Cotton Australia Regional Manager for Darling Downs, Mary O'Brien.
Nighttime inversions are very prevalent in Australia. A little bit of education of applicators to be able to identify or at least try and identify when those inversion conditions are present.
And can we go back to basics and talk about the inversion conditions? That's when the temperature is coldest at soil level with a layer of warm air above?
Yeah, so normally during the day, air near the ground would be warmer and the air temperature would decrease with height. But certainly in the afternoon, late evening, when the ground cools, sometimes quite often we get that air closer to the ground cools quite rapidly and there's warmer air above it. So that cool air is sort of trapped in a layer. And the issue with that is the movement of that air tends to not be turbulent, which is what we need for good spraying conditions. So it tends to flow parallel to the ground. So any fine droplets that are released into that inversion layer as such, closer to the ground, move sort of sideways. They don't get pulled down to the ground as they would during the daytime.
How far can it drift?
Well, how long's the piece of string? I guess it depends on the conditions that those droplets are released into that inversion layer. So if, you know, the wind was at 5 k's an hour and it will stay there and move at that speed, whatever that wind speed is, until the inversion breaks. So, you know, if that's 10 hours before that inversion breaks, that could be 50 kilometres.
Night spraying these days is very popular. There are GPSs on tractors. Obviously, it's cooler at night. Any advice for landholders who do choose to do night spraying? You know, how do they know that the conditions outside have changed once they're sitting comfy in their cab?
I guess the thing is continuous monitoring of it and, first of all, being able to identify if inversion conditions are present. And there's plenty of information out there on, you know, some of the indicators that will assist them in determining if there is an inversion present, but also constantly checking while they're spraying. So during the day, I'd recommend that they check the weather conditions, wind speed and direction, things like that, every load. But at night time, I would suggest they would need to do it more frequently because obviously with the darkness, it's much more difficult to tell when the conditions change. So it may be okay when they start, but it could change an hour later before they sort of stop.
What are the indicators of inversion?
We've got visual indicators and things like that, but a good rule of thumb would be to expect an inversion every night unless you have one of three things, which would be it's raining, which is obviously not good for spraying, heavy low-level cloud, or the wind is consistently above 11 kilometres an hour throughout the evening and through the night. So late in the afternoon, the wind in the local area will often drop right off and it may kick up again during the night, but that dropping off late in the evening, just close to sunset, is another good indicator that an inversion may have set in.
Would it be feasible, and I know the GRDC, I know Cotton Australia, there are lots of groups throwing a lot of money and a lot of attention at spray drift. Would it be feasible to include the Bureau of Meteorology to help identify those conditions and perhaps even make an alert available or something along those lines?
Yeah, I think some of the research is certainly focusing on that, of better ways for chemical applicators to detect inversions and having alert systems out there. There's certainly been some very good research done in that area already, but obviously a lot more is needed. And Cotton Australia has already had some discussions with BOM in regards to what we can do in the future and how we can assist people better in determining the presence of these inversions. A lot of work being done in it, really working together with other industries is key to it. There's no silver bullet to fix this problem. It's a multi-pronged approach, so education, awareness, more research, things like that.
Mary O'Brien from Cotton Australia. Gary Davey says the EPA has fielded three recent complaints from growers at Mungindi, Garrah and Warren, alleging spray drift damage to between 300 and 600 hectares of cotton, but no prosecutions will take place.
Since December, we've had three complaints indicating impacts of between crops of perhaps 300 hectares and upwards. With one of them, which the one we received one before Christmas, we investigated that one. We were able to identify the pesticide that was the cause of the problem, but we weren't able to identify a source of that particular pesticide. And that's one of the real issues that we have with the phenoxy pesticides, which there wasn't any information that we were able to follow up on in terms of where it might have come from, when it was sprayed, all of those sorts of things. And that's the real difficulty we have with so many of these pesticide impacts, that, as you'd understand, a lot of the impacts aren't evident immediately. It takes a little while for the cotton plant to die back or whatever the other non-target crop might be. And
if any growers think that they have had off-target spray drift on their place, considering the difficulty of A, finding the source, and B, prosecuting, can the EPA really do anything to help these people?
Well, we can in some circumstances, Lisa, and I think you've nailed it, though, in terms of the difficulties and the challenges that the EPA faces. But if we have prompt advice to the EPA, if we have a bit of a lead about where they think the spray may have come from, and just provide as much information as they can. And I guess the other thing that the Pesticide Act requires is that people who are using pesticides, they have to keep records, and they have to produce those records when the EPA requests them. So at some point, we log this, and we really encourage people, even if we can't investigate, we encourage affected landholders to ring up and let us know, because if nothing else, that is going to help us build up a picture where there may be hot spots of phenoxy misuse. And then that's going to help us target either an enforcement campaign later or a media campaign or both.
Chinese whispers are something that all communities have to deal with. And when things like this happen, when a crop is damaged, everyone has an opinion. Do you take those into account?
When we investigate, we go and talk to as many people as we can to try and get evidence or some further direction or some corroboration of perhaps the report that we've received. It is very difficult, though, for some people in a farming community, I guess, to dob their neighbours in. That is a challenge. People have to live in that community. And when you see significant impacts to crops, it must be quite a challenge for people on one hand to think, well, I've got to live in the community here. Perhaps I shouldn't report it. Perhaps having to wear 20, 30, 40% crop loss. So it must be quite a challenge. And because of that, the EPA is trying to focus more on, I guess, prevention rather than regulation.
I'm speaking with Gary Davey from the Environment Protection Authority. Gary, do you think there are people out there not taking their responsibilities seriously because of the difficulties the EPA has in investigating and prosecuting any chemical misuse or drift?
I think in the farming community, Lisa, people aren't going to be so much driven by that, but I think there is an imperative for people to get spraying done quickly. Often there's a narrow window of opportunity, so people will perhaps go and press the boundaries a little bit. I don't know that they're doing it deliberately in the sense that they think we won't be able to investigate, but I think perhaps they don't take as much care as they should